Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thursday morning, March 4th, it is 9:40, and we continue, or at least the students and the teachers, to matriculate through the 2020-2021 school year. Cade Brumley joins us, our friend, Louisiana Superintendent of Education, to talk about how it's going. Hey, Cade, how are you?
Hey, Tommy, thanks for having me on today.
Thanks for taking the time. So how is it going? You know, we got vaccines rolling out. Hopefully, maybe fall of 2021 we'll be back to normal. We all hope, fingers crossed, hands, whatever you got to do, we're doing it. How's the school year going so far this year with the COVID pandemic in terms of effectiveness and students getting the education they need, et cetera, Cade?
Well, I was just on a call with human resource directors from systems throughout the state and reminded them that, you know, next week, on Friday, will basically be a year since the governor made the announcement that school buildings would be closed for school last year. Mm-hmm. So we are almost a year out of that initial closure. And boy, have we learned a lot over a year.
That we hope you'll never have to use again, right?
Exactly. I mean, in Louisiana, we've not only had a global health pandemic, but we've had, you know, an especially strong hurricane season. We've had this winter snowstorm. It's been a challenging year, but, you know, as I look across the country and I see, you know, cities and states trying to figure out, you know, how do we educate, how do we keep people safe? And, you know, I believe our educational community in Louisiana has done a really admirable job of doing both.
And did you learn things, and I was kiddingly saying, hoping you'll never use them again, but that you can use again, whether there's a pandemic or a winter storm, a hurricane, or what have you?
Yeah, I think so. I'll give you two or three quick examples. I mean, number one, there is no doubt that we are in a much better place in terms of technology and the ability to offer meaningful student learning experiences virtually. Now, is that perfect right now? No. Is that so much better than March a year ago? Absolutely. So, I mean, I think those lessons will stay with us. I think another thing that's really important is, you know, we have released guidance on how tutoring can be offered to students in meaningful, thoughtful ways, and have provided tutoring lessons to systems throughout the state. And so I think that we'll see more of that taking place in due time. And then the other idea, which we've been pushing out pretty significantly over the last month to systems, is the idea of what summer might look like in a school system. For, you know, so long we've had this idea of summer school, and people have, you know, the way they think about summer school, but, you know, we know that over the last year, kids have lost out more than just reading and math. They've lost out in music and choir and art and PE. And so if we can design summer programming that feels more like a camp where kids are engaged in some of those elective activities and there's some level of community engagement where community comes in and partners in many ways, and then students are pulled out to tutoring sessions in full-day programming, I mean, I think that's an incredible opportunity for us to learn from that experience as well.
In terms of costs of the pandemic, I know a lot of districts provided kids with laptops that they didn't have or tablets. Do you have any idea how much that pandemic has cost?
Yeah, I mean, it has been incredibly expensive to educate through the pandemic in a number of ways. One being, you know, just the additional sanitation measures, which includes the products, but also the staff to do that. You know, anytime you have quarantines where you have staff that are out, you have to fill those vacancies with additional staff to come in. You know, additional bus routes. You know, just over and over. Now, thankfully, systems have received over the course of time, you know, federal stimulus money to help offset that, and they received that beginning last spring, and a new round for this upcoming year as well, which will all be helpful. Not just in terms of trying to make sure that we are able to have face-to-face instruction, but safe instruction, but also help with some of the needs such as mental health or learning recovery as well.
I'm glad you brought up stimulus money, because I'm a little bit confused with the stimulus package and who has what, when's it supposed to be spent, who's sitting on it. Do you need more? Walk us through that if you can, because I'm a little bit confused when one side says, well, you're allocating more money and money's there that hasn't been spent already. I, these days, Kate, I don't know what's true and what's not. You're in the midst of it. Talk to me. Tell me.
Yeah, you know, I can't speak to the broader stimulus package. I can speak to how it impacts the educational system. And so there's been a couple of things. One, you had the initial CARES round of funding that was last spring, which we were able to allocate to systems. And there has been some attention given to the fact that systems have not utilized all of that funding. And in many ways, people felt like that was a negative. But the other side of that is systems did not know how long they would be in a pandemic. They did not know if there would be additional funding available, so they were more cautious. They didn't want to spend it all up front and get to a point where, you know, we were having to try to have school and they didn't have additional funds to do that. Now, you had the December congressional allocation, which, you know, provided additional funding opportunities for systems. And so we are a flow through as a state agency of most of that funding to systems. But what we're trying to do is think about collective impact around that money and how can we make sure that those funds within our ability are used, one, to make sure that we're able to have face-to-face instruction for the spring and next school year, but also around priority areas that are really important for us as a state, whether it's, you know, learning recovery or literacy or mental and emotional health or the things that we know have been really important during this period of time. And so we also want to make sure that as we release that money, that we have a transparent public reporting so that people can see where is that money being utilized within local systems.
So how do you go about planning on fall? Do you plan on what's going on now with social distancing and some virtual learning? Do you plan on the campuses being wide open and we're back to business? Come and join the choir, the football team, PE, what have you? How in the world do you go about planning for that, Cade?
Well, those are conversations we're having now. You know, I think that the vaccine really advances our hope and belief that it will look more normal next year than it does this year. Today, we have 68% of our kids across the state in full face-to-face instruction every day, which is good. But we are thinking about, you know, lessons learned and where we might be in the fall and what the opening of school might need to look like. But really, it's too early to be able to know exactly what that will look like because, you know, we're many months out from that.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about free ACT tests before we run out of time.
Yeah, we're really excited about that. So we know that, you know, it's been a challenging year for our state and many families financially. And so what we have decided to do with some of the funding that we had available is to offer basically an opportunity for, you know, every sophomore, junior, and senior in the state to take a publicly funded ACT this spring or summer at no cost to the family. And so if you're a sophomore, for instance, and you take the ACT, it might mean that you qualify for dual enrollment classes in your future high school experience or AP. You know, if you're a junior or senior, it might mean that you qualify for the school of your choice or for TOPS or for additional scholarships, or, you know, a number of other things. So, you know, that those dollars have been available, made available to systems, and the intent of those dollars is to provide every student, sophomore, you know, junior, senior, the opportunity to have a publicly funded ACT test this spring or summer.
Are there any programs like there are in, I know some private schools have programs to kind of tutor the kids, help them along as it relates to the ACT? Is there anything like that in the public school system?
Yeah, I mean, there are efforts around ACT prep. I think one of the most important things, though, in terms of that is just good core content instruction in English and math and science every single day. And, you know, you can always work on test-taking strategies at some point, and that happens. But, you know, really we have to be focused on just knowing where our kids are, providing good core content instruction in those core subjects, and that will certainly go a long way on the ACT.
And there's no way and no data available to see if this pandemic has lowered the ACT scores nationwide or changed the comparative scale? Do we know any of that yet?
No, we don't know that. We know that in our state, you know, we have seen the lowest ACT score as a whole in since we've been giving it to our entire population. And so we are taking that on as a challenge to see, you know, what might need to be done to improve that. And part of that is going to be data collection on areas of strength and weakness.
Before I let you go, I was talking to our previous guest, Keith Corville, about teacher evaluation. And in general, you've been doing this a long time, Kate. In terms of teacher evaluation, is there a way to do that? Because here's my thing. There are so many things beyond a teacher's control. I can't send my kid to the best private school in the world and not get involved and think that everything's going to turn out all right. So many things are out of a teacher's control. Is there a fair way to evaluate them, given all the variables?
Well, this particular year, one of the things that we have done, the rules require in a normal, typical year that teachers receive two observations. And, you know, we knew this was a challenging year, so we made the recommendation, and our state board approved that we would lower that to one for this year, which would free up principal time to deal with this pandemic, but also focus their attention on the teachers who needed support the most. What I will say specifically about observations is, you know, I don't view it as a one-time event. Mm-hmm. I think school leaders and teacher leaders need to be working with teachers every single day, providing them support, providing them best practices, being in their classrooms to support them in a number of different ways. And then you have that relationship built where you can actually improve practice. And when we talk specifically about an observation of a classroom, you know, I think that before that happens, the evaluator needs to spend time with that teacher to understand what's going to happen, what are they going to see in that classroom. Mm-hmm. They need to do that observation, and then they need to gather up together afterwards to have conversations about what happened and how to improve.
Kate, I appreciate your time, and we love having you on because I think that's probably one of the most important things we can talk about is education in the state. And I don't know that, you know, there are pros and cons to everything, right? Has anybody ever proven that more education is bad?
Yeah, that's right. And our educators this year have been heroes, so a shout out to them.
All right. Thank you, sir. Have a good weekend. Kate Brumley, Louisiana Superintendent of Education. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Newell Norman, find out what he's got planned.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.